I want to use AI as an assistance in helping young people or junior analysts get unstuck, because I used to get stuck a lot all the times, and I had to, talk to people, review reports, and that took a long time. The analyst should own the communication all the time, and AI is always the assistant at this point, right? And the human is the actual defender in that role.
Welcome to Defender Fridays, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Usual pitch here is, Defender Fridays, we get to have interesting chats with all kinds of people in the industry. So we're trying to make the circle a little bit bigger so everybody learns about interesting things. To that effect, so today, yeah, so it's not slides, it's a conversation. So please join in. So we have Carla with us today. Hey, how's it going?
Happy Friday, everyone. Yes,
Happy
excited to be here.
Friday. Nice, nice. Do you want to start maybe with a quick introduction about yourself?
Sure thing. Yeah, I'd love to do that. Let me just switch camera here. There we go. Awesome. Well, I'm so excited. Thank you so much, Maxine, William, and the rest of the team for inviting me online. I'm Carlo Ines. Very excited to be here at Defender Fridays. And I'm the founder of Ignite Cyber Academy. I like to say that I live at the intersection of three things: cybersecurity operations, hands-on teaching, and community. I'm one of those people who actually gets excited about logs, timelines, MITRE attack mappings, suspicious PowerShells going on, SIG data, Sigma rules, and the moment when I hear a student say, "Hey, oh, now I understand what the attacker was doing," that's the moment where I realize, why I'm teaching and doing all this. I spent years in cybersecurity as a practitioner. Supporting SOC operations, being part of Rapid7 MDR for 5 years. I've done a lot of detection engineering, threat hunting with Rapid7, DFIR workflows, cyber defense projects. I'm also work with Recorded Future on the intelligence side. I work with open source tools as well. I love connecting and learning more about different enterprise security platforms. I think Lima Charlie is an amazing platform. And through any of those platforms, go through real Defender workflows where the question is, can you not only define the term, but can you investigate what happened and explain it clearly, right? That's something that I enjoy a lot. On the teaching side, I've been teaching cybersecurity for about 6 years now. I started with a company called Hacker USA. I'm now employed with TCM Security. I just started that new role for cybersecurity content creator. I've been doing part-time teaching with them, teaching SOC level one, SOC level two. Actually, we're going to do SOC level two this month with them, and it's exciting. I train students and professionals across SOC analysts, DFIR, threat hunting, security plus, blue team topics. I've supported security education through boot camps, community programs. I'm part of Blue Team Village, as you can see here, my DEF CON shirt, t-shirt here. I am one of the leaders for Blue Team Village. I like to help create the CTF every year. And this year I'm doing a talk at DEF CON for CTI 101. And I'm also going to do DEF CON training for a 4-day boot camp, red versus blue and AI. I'm going to talk more about it. But I love doing those type of things. I love doing hands-on labs. My passion is always helping people move from not only theory, but going to that confidence scenario where they understand what's going on. And my main motto is, want to train, detect, defend together. And building community is what I really enjoy doing. Connecting with you, connecting with the rest of the Lima Charlie community, other communities that I've been part of, DEF CON, Women's Society Cyber Jutsu, Raisa Cyber on the East Coast, B-Sides, Nova. I just love connecting and be open to teach people what I learn and also give them a nice time and fun time when we're doing boot camps or just training on its own. So that's me in a nutshell.
Awesome, awesome. It sounds like you're a busy guy. That's cool stuff. And I think you touched on it, right? It makes complete sense. On the topic, I think, of what you wanted to chat about today around like open source and SOC, and kind of like the boundary between those two things. So yeah, I'm curious, what are your thoughts in that world? And I would say how that's changing, I think, is the part that I'm curious about, because I feel like I have a good mental model of like 10 years ago, how, open source and SOC that worked, but how's that changing?
Definitely. Cybersecurity training has to move beyond just the passive learning that we had in the past, right? A lot of people understand cyber concepts, but they still need that hands-on repetition with real workflows, and that's what works. Reading alerts, investigating suspicious activity, correlating endpoint and network telemetry, mapping behavior to meta attack, building detections, and writing reports and using AI. Without just blindly trusting it, right? AI can accelerate the analyst, but it should never replace the evidence itself or our judgment and critical thinking. That's something that I love to put out there. AI should support the analyst, not replace the analyst.
For sure, for sure. And what's which part of the tooling do you think open source still has the best the best presence in the SOC today, right? Like, I think there's a lot of open source tools across a lot of different parts of the stack, from from the endpoint to the storage data lake, from the threat intelligence. Like, it's pretty wide. Do you feel that open source does a better job at one of those specifically?
Oh yes, yeah. Open source can actually, and I've used it across different industries and different times in my career. Open source, it's wonderful because you can actually have an open source stack, and that's what I actually started creating with the team at Ignite Cyber Academy. We created Open SOC Initiative for people to start training. Basically, we built this end-to-end workflow for people inside a virtual machine where you get hands-on experience on Wazoo, for example, for endpoint telemetry and also network telemetry. And then we have Mist for the intelligence side of things. We have also the Hive to manage use case management. We have telemetry and also DFIR workflows with Time Sketch. And also we add a little bit of a flavor of other tools like CyberChef and additional tools that can help review some of those workflows. An open SOC initiative is based on open source technologies meant for training. We started doing this, and this is the technology that we use across all of our boot camps and trainings that we do at Ignite Cyber Academy. In real life, I wanted to give people a taste, right? I've been part of different MDR SOCs and different teams doing threat intel. And I wanted to let them know, hey, how a fusion center would look like in small scale, right? So open source allows us to do that. Open source allows us to kind of like simulate this scenario where an analyst or young analyst actually is exposed to different things and is able to actually get a taste of everything, right? So if I start from an alert on a specific open source technology like Wazoo and then move on to the Hive creating use cases or actually implementing a workflow of intelligence inside Mist, which is another repository for intelligence, and then using AI and Jupyter Notebooks to actually automate a lot of the workflows that are needed to enhance and enrich, and then tie that with AI like Llama running locally to actually help somebody who's new or somebody who wants to review some alerts and bring the additional context. So all this open source stack actually enhances the training and the leverage. And of course, once you graduate, once you start getting familiar with all these tools and translating that to Lima Charlie, for example, as a specific SIM and platform to actually look at that, and you can translate some of that knowledge that you learn with open source stack to start using Splunk or start using Lima Charlie or other tools that are out there in speeding up that process, right? And helping people get ready for enterprise solutions that are out there.
I was curious when you talk about AI assisted SOC training, is it the AI assistance on the training aspect? Is it the AI assistance on the SOC analyst side? Is it the AI assistance for deployment, or like AI created Lutus ranges or what have you? Like, there's all sorts of places that you could be applying it. So when you say AI assisted here, you're mostly talking about AI assisting the analyst in the analyst role. It's still taught in the classroom in the training, but it's not AI for like scaling the training itself.
Right, exactly. Yeah, AI is very powerful. And like you said, but at the same time, it's not magic, right? In the SOC, AI can help with summarizing logs, like noisy alerts, right? Helping the analysts, draft investigation questions or helping organizing timelines or mapping activity to MITRE ATT&CK. And after that, suggesting maybe some detection logic, like we've seen some suspicious traffic, or at the end, and this is what I used to do every day as an analyst, help me improve my report clarity, right? I want to use AI as an assistance in helping young people or junior analysts get unstuck, because I used to get stuck a lot all the times, and I had to, talk to people, review reports, and that took a long time. But with AI, we can speed that up, and the analyst still has to validate everything, right? The analyst, the human owns the evidence, right? The analyst owns the decision. The analyst should own the communication all the time, and AI is always the assistant at this point, right? And the human is the actual defender in that role.
I'm amused by an older quote from IBM, apparently 1979. A computer can never be held accountable, therefore a computer must never make a management decision. And like swap out computer for AI, and that's the lesson that we are forgetting 47 years later, far too often. I struggle sometimes with good places for AI to be used as opposed to replace the learning and replace the communicating with others. And I think you were the nail on the head for the reporting aspect of if there is a standard of your reports must address these things, then however you choose to do it, a custom GPT of here's my current report. Well, it doesn't address these things that you're not going to get with a word check and such, that like, hey, you're currently not addressing this topic that you said. If it's the five whys or whatever, or I don't know, the who, what, where, why, when, and currently you're not discussing the when in the report itself, like that is linting for the human generated text. That's a good place for AI, legitimately.
The thing I love about that quote is it doesn't talk about intelligence. It's not a question of how good or how bad it is. No, it's just a question of, who's accountable for it. And that is why it's as true, 30, oh my God, 50 years ago, I guess at this point, than today. It's still the
47 years
2000.
ago, 1979 training manual. I used to do a different analogy for it. Engineers have their stamp of like, I, this engineer with my name, am vouching for this thing. When you check in code, that is your computer engineer, your programming engineer, your programmer stamp on it. If you haven't tested that code, if you haven't read that code, you are doing a disservice. And maybe you won't get caught that time, just like the engineer stamping somebody else's plans that they've never looked at. But when that building falls, when that code fails to compile, it is you vouched for it ultimately. The AI is not the responsible party, you are. So I think always keeping that line in mind of yes, the AI can help you along the way, but the AI is helping you do something that you vouch for. You're still the one vouching for it at the end of the day.
AI is like the intern. You're supposed to actually observe and mentor your intern and make sure your intern does not do bad things.
And maybe not give your intern global admin, domain admin, and GitHub admin simultaneously.
Where's the fun?
We're supposed to be the operator in the loop. The loop goes off the rails if we remove ourselves from it. We ought not to hand machine guns to monkeys because they don't know what to do with them. We need to teach people the right thing to do with what we give them before we give them loaded weapons.
And I
And
mean,
that's the thing that we
there's
have to
the
keep relearning.
infinite monkeys, infinite typewriters eventually get Shakespeare, and like, well, we're gonna solve this problem by giving infinite monkeys API access
Bazookas.
to everything, read, write. And sure, it might
Yeah.
solve the problem, but you can also solve the problem if we don't have enough incidents, so let's give AI access to everything, and now we have enough incidents.
I
Everything
mean,
is a nail if you hammer shaped your thoughts hard enough.
yeah, I mean, there's also the like the other perspective on that. Like if you bring yourself down to pure pragmatism, right? And you say, hypothetically, if I have an AI that does a better job than I can, right? Beyond
It's not going to
the,
happen unless you're an idiot.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I that, that I would not put money on that. And
I remain open to the possibility that I might be proven wrong, but at least for the time being, like the judgment sense, the actual like reasoning ability, that's the part that we need to not hand over to the machines, because again, it's just like it always was. They are not responsible to anybody. They cannot be held responsible. So we need to be the ones who remain in charge We can get good input from them if they provide good input, but we should not trust that their output is good because we are, in fact, the drivers. We are the operators, and we need to continue being the operators and steering the ship. The fact that the vessel might be heading in a steady direction does not mean you get to take your hand off the wheel. It just means that it's actually that much more important that you keep your hand on the wheel when you're steering a mighty ship, because even though it might be going very well at the moment, at any given point in time, the more powerful the machine, the more dangerous the tool, the more deadly the weapon, the more carefully you need to wield it. Otherwise, you will really cut your own dick off.
I guess I agree, but rephrasing slightly to my own language, yes, AI has lots of good inputs and can be the second source, but you should not, like, we don't want to be the AI's in the driver's seat and we just like look over and like, hey, I provided information and I get all the good feels of doing it, but I didn't actually do any of it. We, if you're the AI is not accountable, you are. Do not pretend otherwise. Do not be the human in the middle. And really, the AI is the one making the decision, and you trust its summary implicitly because it will get some things wrong. You can look over and you can look at its notes, but you are the one making the decision on behalf of the company in the SOC sense. And having some, oh, this is just like people on the offensive side have talked about having intentional strings in their ransomware binaries saying that this is an example just for demonstration purposes, et cetera, which convinces the AI that this is a training thing and not to mark it as malicious. Like, that doesn't trick the real human, but it can absolutely trick the AI, and currently really does. And you are responsible if you're shipping off that decision to AI.
AI can't see through illusions. They're easily tricked. They're an
It's all part of
inherently
the context window.
they're an inherently confusable deputy. So, I mean, all you have to do is literally just take a bomb and t say this is not a bomb and hand it to an AI, and it will happily go bring that into whatever place you tell it to bring it. Like, they are the perfect witty, what am I trying to say, willing imbecile. Like, they are the ultimate useful idiot, and we need to keep that in mind, that at least with what we're dealing with currently with LLMs, they are not thinking. They are not alive. They do not have judgment sense. We need to be the thing that applies that to the loop. And you can't just sort of let them take the wheel and drive, or you're going to end up going off a cliff somewhere.
Time will tell. We will see. It will be interesting couple of years, at the very least. Going back a little bit to the to the open source side of things, I think you touched kind of on an interesting angle here, which personally, I find really like resonates with how I think about it, which is open source tools in cybersecurity tend to be more tools than magical solution, right? What I mean by that is like, hey, I deploy the CrowdStrike AV. I expect that done. It protects me magically. How exactly, I'll never get to know, but it will do a good job. Whereas open source tools tend to be more exposing kind of how the logic works, like what it's looking for, right? Enabling the user. And I feel like as a training tool or as a tool to get into cybersecurity, that's really, really valuable to take that approach so that you understand the the fundamentals of cybersecurity before you understand the fundamentals of how one particular tool somehow keeps you safe, right? And so I really like this idea of like, you said, I think building like a small simulated SOC kind of thing. Did I understand that right?
Definitely. OpenSOC initiative, something that I started with the community. It's about doing that specifically, just creating this specific SOC environment that's in a virtual machine that people can use on their own. So when we do the 5-day boot camp that I'm going to talk about too, I want to also mention that in the 4-day boot camp that happens at DEF CON, and the first one goes online. People have this virtual machine where they have all this open source OpenSOC tools out there, so they can help and training there to learn how to detect, how to do triage, investigations, correlation, how to do the mapping to MITRE ATT&CK, do some hunting, documentation, reporting, and creating some detections, and also AI in there. So having all this open source tech stack for like Wasoo, MISP, the Hive, having TimeSketch, having Llama running locally to actually help, and have Jupyter Notebooks in the back end to actually walk through. So there's all these open source technologies running that can help any analyst or person that's going through this type of scenarios. That's what I always wanted, right? When I was working at after I left Rapid7, I was like, hey, you know, how we can train people in the future to actually, you know, get a taste of everything. You know, I've been part of fusion centers where you have all these roles. You have the threat detection analyst, you have the threat intel analyst, you have the SOC analyst, you have forensic analyst, malware analyst, you have all these people, which is amazing. And you want to be able to give a taste and understand, you know, how a real SOC looks like, right? So I wanted to give people an overview with that. And the best way to do it was open source, right? Open source technologies. My team, the engineering team, is working on creating this open source tool. We use VirtualBox. We use all the open source tools to actually create this type of environment for people that they can download. They can actually go through the scripts there that guide people and actually walk through the different scenarios. So just like any type of training, I like to create like the specific scenarios where we start creating a profile of a persona, right? The threat actor that has specific TTPs, and then map that out to the curriculum of each day. And when we're walking through each of the scenarios and what happens in each day in any of the boot camps that we've created, we're able to help, you know, all these open source tools can help the student actually go through that. And like you mentioned, you know, go through, see the code if they want to, right? They can go down and actually see the scripts that are happening in the background, mostly in Python, or we can in Docker containers. So there's, if you want to go under the hood, you can actually can modify some of those things and learn that in real life. I had to deploy open source technologies. I work for government contractors, and we use a lot of open source software out there for big data manipulation, doing threat hunting. I use open source software to actually create threat detection capabilities. And when I was working with DARPA, working with US Army, US Navy, and all the other people, like most people are using open source in production, right? But at the same time, of course, we all know there's some risks to that. AI is here as well, so there's other risks that we need to be aware of. But at the same time, we had one thing that I wanted to mention since we actually talked about AI. And it's a concept that I think it's important to note is the AI literacy, right? Meaning that you know how we can use AI effectively today and be responsible and critically is very important when we actually want to understand, hey, you know, using AI just doesn't mean that we, you know, we know how to use prompts. I mean, knowing how to use AI inside an investigation workflow is helpful. You know, how to question the answer, how to validate it against the logs and the evidence, and how to recognize when the AI is actually guessing, right, or hallucinating, right? And enhancing my job, like, you know, as an analyst, when I didn't have AI in the past, but now that it's here, you know, the future analyst needs that technical skill, communication skill, and the AI literacy. That's one concept that I want to throw in there since it came up, right? That's something that we have to use, we're using today, right? So.
That's cool. I had not thought about this idea of like learning to use AI in the SOC now as part of the learning to, you know, cyber analyst kind of thing. That makes complete sense to me. Sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
No, I was curious. I am completely biased towards like even before you go to a class, having some experience beforehand means you'll have a better experience in that class. And I'm almost always biased towards what can someone do in between one day and one week of actual work, between 8 and 40 hours with $0. What can they do to best learn this area and get started to even to better prepare for classes such as yours?
Yeah, definitely. So that's a great question. So one of the team members, he created an open training. If you go to opencyberlab.com, he actually put out all the pre-labs. So before you even go to a boot camp, that, you know, as you said, there's going to be, you know, a lot of information thrown at you in 5 days or 4 days. There are other training grounds, pre-rounds, where you're actually doing pre-lab work. So if we're going to dive into specific workflows, in OpenCyberLab.com, there's pre-labs that are free, right, where people can actually learn, the basics of creating a Sigma rule, creating a Yara rule, basics of, some of the AI attacks that are out there. Just basic stuff that preps you for the 5-day, experience or the 4-day experience that we're creating with the team. So we do have some pre-labs that people can do ahead of time. So they're getting ready, right? They can do it at any time. So as soon as they sign up, they'll be able to get access to that. Anybody can get access to that, opencyberlab.com. I'll drop the link. And then once you go through, most of those specific free resources that Amit created for people, then you're better prepared to go to a boot camp where you're gonna learn a lot of things in a short time frame to actually get familiar with the workflows. And for my end, what I want to teach most is the mindset, right? How to use critical thinking, how to think as an analyst is my goal. So then you use the tools, you use the different scenarios, and be successful at it. My main goal is for people to have value, and at the end of those 4 or 5 days, if you do the prep work beforehand, you go to the 4 or 5 days. At the end, you have this report that you created throughout the whole experience, and then you can show that as a value. As an analyst, I used to create hundreds of reports throughout my career. So now that we have AI, we have all this, I like to teach, what are the main structure that you have in specific finding reports. And then at the end of any boot camp, you want to show, upper management, your manager or your team, hey, I understand how to create a full report, top to bottom, just like dfirreport.com, for example, that they give great examples for reports. Similar reports created so that people know, hey, I understand the attacker timeline, and this is the type of scenarios that I've seen, and these are the main TTPs. This is how I map this to the diamond model, and more information about it. And then in the end, you have this. The one thing is having the final report, but we also do some CTF. We do a mini CTF inside this type of training, so to gauge people, hey, let's take you to the next level to actually give you a taste. Hey, go deeper into the investigation and see if you can correlate more data, more sources to actually do that. And it's a small CTF, capture the flag events. We partner with Skillbit in this scenario to give people that last capstone so that they can actually, have the ability to challenge themselves, right? You want to get to the next level, right? And AI can help you to get there. And then finally, learn these things, but at the same time, have some bragging rights too, and also have this report, ready to go to show, people when you're off and get certified and all that at the end, and then show that you actually understood the material and you have something that you can actually use at work, right? You can go back to work and say, hey, I use all these open source tools, I understand some of the workflows now, and then I can start, providing some value.
Nice, nice, nice. That's very cool. I think you guys were very right on the pre-work, because I think we've talked about this at some point, but cybersecurity is not linear learning, right? So learning to do something on your own when you don't know what you're doing is just part of what you're going to be doing more in the future. So, yeah, that's very cool. Thank you, Carla, for coming in. If folks want to get in touch with you to talk about like any of those things, is there a better way of doing that?
Yeah, definitely. I'm gonna drop the two links here. I think this is the main chat feed for everyone. Let me try that. Yeah, I know time flew by really fast, right?
It did, right?
I'm dropping the links to the boot camps with some discount codes that are available from the two partners. So one is Training Pros. I want to give a shout out to them for partnering with me with that, and also DEFCON Training. Both links are here. They have discount codes for people to sign up. So sign up. It's gonna be fun in Vegas if you want to go on site. There's the Blue Team Village is there. Challenge yourself with CTF. Also do the boot camp training with me and Mariana. We're gonna be there for the 4-day boot camp, and for the 5-day boot camp, it's online. We have a pilot going on that starts in July. Like that could be also be prep work, right? For on inside and on site type of training. So drop those that right there. Let me just add my LinkedIn. And this was fun. Thank you so much, Maxine, and the rest of the Lima Charlie team. I look forward to partnering with you guys as well in the future to, use Lima Charlie and teach people a little bit of that.
Awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. For sure. And so just a quick bit of news, closing here. So I've got some sad news and also some fun news. So on the sad news, next Friday will be the last Defender Fridays that we're going to be doing. We've been working hard to kind of like keep it going, but it's really difficult and it takes a lot of time. And so we've decided to kind of hit pause on that for a while. The fun news part of this is that we're kind of going full circle here. Next week is going to be Eric Capuano joining us, and we're going to be talking about all kinds of things with him. I say full circle for those that don't know, because he was the one who started Defender Fridays. We're going to be talking about lots of things around like AI and the SOC and all kinds of cool stuff. So do join us next week. We will be, we'll miss you guys. But if you're in Vegas at Black Hat, or you know, drop us a line.
I'll bring a stack of the Defender Friday T-shirts with me to Vegas. So if you guys want a collector's shirt, I'll have them there. And if you're real nice and reach out on LinkedIn, I can probably ship you one too. So
dibs on awesome. One large.
Awesome. One. All right, that's it. Oh, William, I think you're trying to say something, but you, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what I'll do with my Fridays and very few meetings.
I know. Maybe we'll try to find some other excuse to get a small community together on Fridays and talk about cool stuff.
We'll figure something out. Everybody, keep your calendars open for this same window. We'll fill it with something else.
Sounds
just
good.
A drop-in break room or something, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
We'll figure it out.
All right.
Awesome. Have a good weekend, everybody. See you next week.
And that brings us to the end of another Defender Fridays discussion. Support our show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend, subscribe, or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening from. If you want to be a part of the conversation and join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake, with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.